Broadcasting from Lockport, New York, it's time for The Dads Must Be Crazy. Just three guys raising kids and currently hiding from them in an undisclosed tool shed to talk about parenting, pop culture, and penguins. Or something else that starts with a P. It's Craig, the stay-at-home dad historian and hockey enthusiast. Howie, the stay-at-home dad who used to be a reporter when journalism was a thing. And Bobby, the retired Army vet, Trekkie, and gamer, helping to raise three kids in beautiful Western New York. Now, here's the dads.
Welcome back to the Dads Must Be Crazy, episode 14. Yes, while we are still in the middle of summer, you know what it means? It means it's time to get school supplies.
It does.
To make that annual pilgrimage to your local convenience store
or
your
box
big
store.
Box store and buy all the stuff that they won't use.
Pretty
it comes
much.
Home in pristine shape at the end of the season.
Although I was scrolling through Facebook a few minutes before we started, and a friend of mine from high school who is currently a teacher put up the following, and that is, all of you complaining about the fact that you need to buy your kids 10 glue sticks have obviously never seen your kid use a glue stick. Got me thinking, like, well, maybe she's got a point there. So
it's not the glue sticks as much as you need to have a blue folder with three rings in it, but that folder never gets used. I can't stand buying something and then we never use it.
It's gotten better for my kids as they've gotten further into the school, further up in the grade level, I should say. My daughter recently found out who her teacher is going to be for fifth grade. My son is going to be in eighth grade and taking classes at little local community college, and that also is going through some shifting. So, yeah, you got to make sure, as long as they've got everything and they do okay, you know, if they need the supplies in a pinch, I don't mind going out to get them. But I do like
having them. It's definitely different than it was in my day. Maybe I was a little bit lazier than your normal student is today, which I know is hard to believe. But I had my Green Bay Packers Trapper Keeper and a packet of paper, lined paper, college ruled, because wide rules for sissies.
Yep. I agree.
Look at Billy. He's got the wide rules.
He can only fit 20 lines on his page. I've got 35.
Goodness.
And I would get all my books at the beginning of the school year when they gave you your classroom books. I'd take them all home and I'd leave them at home. And I would have folders at home for various classes, but I'd take my one Trapper Keeper and just write notes in it all day, and then transfer them when I got home. And if I needed the book, I would take the extra one off the bookshelf in the classroom. So I wasn't carrying anything in my backpack other than lunch and whatever I happened to be selling that week.
That's very ambiguous statement there, sir.
This is a family show, so we'll leave it at that.
Like, wait.
Anyway, I think we were both a little stunned at that. Like, okay.
Selling oregano?
No. Nothing illegal.
No, he's selling cassettes. You can get 10 for a dollar. No.
All right. Jeez. Blow pops and condoms.
Oh, because I was like, crap, you know, little Billy's out back smoking basil right now.
No.
Something else.
Nothing like that.
You got any stronger? Like cloves?
Nope. No.
Oh, goodness.
Oh, my God. Whatever you're selling.
Yeah. Craig is now distracted.
That threw me for a loop.
Yeah, I was truly distracted.
Yeah, okay. Oh, my back was turned. I wanted to see what was going on. So, all right.
Wait till she puts her glasses on. Ha-cha-cha.
What was like?
Oh, my God.
It's like the Big Bang Theory. Wearing glasses? Say something. Molecules. I mean.
In Wendy's case, it might be algebra.
Right.
Or equations.
A
I don't know.
A squared plus B squared equals C squared.
No, it'd be like. No. Exactly. I was going to say Pythagorean. Yeah. That's what would have been said. So getting back on track, talking about school supplies and stuff like that. I remember going to school supply shopping. Pencils, crayons or colored pencils, maybe a couple pens, and a new plastic lunchbox that had whatever
plastic lunchbox.
Yeah, like the big boxy ones.
How young are you?
Well, like I still had some of the metal ones.
I had
like,
metal ones.
I had a metal one. I think I had a metal one one time. Then they transitioned to plastic.
But now then in the mid 80s, they did. It was like 85 or 86. You really started to see the prominence of the big plastic.
By 86, I was heading into junior high, and you know you were not cool if you took a lunchbox.
Yeah, you had to brown bag it.
You had brown bag or you bought. So
exactly.
By the time that the plastic ones came in, I was done with lunchboxes. But I had the A-Team. I had Lassie. I had a Hee-Haw one.
Nice.
And I ruined my poor Lassie one because I belted a kid upside the head with it. He was chasing me home and wouldn't leave me alone, so I whacked him with it. Ironically, later, he became my brother-in-law.
What did you sell him? Anything?
Nothing.
Oh, okay.
We didn't know each other during those years.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But now he's not my brother-in-law anymore, so.
Okay.
But yeah. I may have done permanent damage.
I think I had basically two or three years where...
Oh, an Elf.
Elf, oh.
I think Elf was the last one I had that was metal, because that must have been right around the same time that I was in fifth or sixth grade getting ready to go to the junior high.
Well, the metal ones would bend, warp, break. They would all break eventually.
And they'd all smell a little funky by December.
Right. The plastic one you could wash out. You wouldn't have to worry about it rusting. But the thing is... the design on the front would eventually, it was a big sticker. So if you ruined the sticker, you were screwed. So if you got one school year out of it, great. If your parents are like, take care of it because you're going to use it for two school years, well, then you had to be really careful. I think I managed to go through like two or three during my elementary school life. And the only one I really remember was like an awesome Transformers logo on it. That was about it.
I had Transformers. I had G.I. Joe. And I think I had a He-Man one at one point.
Those sound like the big three, as far as I'm concerned. Somebody might have had a Thundercats one floating around in my school.
Because there were Thundercats. Voltron was big back then, too.
Yeah, yeah. And you fast forward to today, and my kids are like, let's get a new lunchbox. I took my two girls out with me yesterday to one of the local big box stores, and my youngest is going to be in full-day kindergarten this year. So we...
Yay
is right. So we're looking at lunchboxes, and they have the various kinds that would be more vertical, and then they have the ones that would be more horizontal. And there was a Minnie Mouse one she looked at, and I looked at it like, you know what? This is not good, because it's got one of those like poofy plastic designs on the front. I said, you know what? Not a good idea, because if she does this, you know, throws this in her backpack the wrong way, or plastic will break, and then it's going to peel, and then we're going to have a major fit thrown. So,
do we actually use lunchboxes anymore? My kids have, like, these purse things and these
Yeah, that's what
things.
I'm talking. They're zip-up bags, and they're all insulated, like, and they don't hold anything the right way. So many of them don't.
I don't know.
Yeah, that's what my kids have. Like, I have the mini look. They look like a cooler.
Yeah.
But... They hold stuff. I mean, if you pack them right and you put in the appropriate amount of like refreezable like ice cube thingies, then it holds everything right. So, you know, my kids have theirs and that's what they use for their lunch boxes. Now, we went school supply shopping this past weekend, right? So we went to our local mart and I was looking at folders. Because we got to have all these folders. Some have to be paper. Some have to be plastic. Some have to have brads in them. Some have to have holes in them. Some have to have pockets. Yeah.
I'm sorry.
I know. I know where that was going.
Yeah. If you want to know what we're laughing about, you'll have to listen to Shenanigans at some point. Yes.
And so I had to get some folders for my 9-year-old. And so my wife's got my two little ones. Looking at, you know, trying to find pencils and crayons and stuff like that. So I go look for the folders. I turn the corner and all the folders that are like appropriate for, you know, that are like girly, you know, sparkly and pink and purple and all that stuff. It says, be a pineapple. Go through life with a crown on your head. And I was like, what?
Yeah.
No.
I know. Keep going. I'm enjoying this because I'm agreeing with everything you're saying so far. Because
I'm like, nope. That's a big box of nope. Like, that's not happening. Like, you're going to get, here you go, black, blue, red, green, yellow. Or we'll just go with the Roy G. Biv thing, you know, and it's going to be plain. Because
blue
I'm not.
Blue and sparkles, baby.
There you go.
You're one of your 10 glue sticks.
There
Rub
you
it go. On your folder and drop some glitter on it.
There you go.
It's girly now.
And I'm sitting here and I'm like, it says be a pineapple. Like, how ridiculous is
that? I don't even know
that?
What that means.
I don't know what that means.
I've tried keeping up with millennial phrases. That one makes no sense to me.
No.
I don't even know if it's a millennial phrase. It sounds like a failed Hallmark card.
So, well, like, when now we see these things, they have different pop culture references on these folders. Do you remember what your the one you wanted when you were a kid that your parents wouldn't let you have? You ended up getting the plain one instead.
Yeah, I remember the one I wanted at the book fair that would be coming through school when you could get like a couple different types of folders or whatever, and my parents wouldn't spend $4 on a folder that had whatever design on it.
When you could get a plain one that did the same exact thing.
You get
it's going to hold
some paper.
Plain
one for 15 cents, or you can get the Reggie Jackson one. Reggie Jackson was the one I wanted.
Okay, that's okay.
Yeah.
For $1.50, you're paying 10 times as much to have this guy's face on it, and my parents were like, no.
Yeah. Yeah, all three of us have turned into our parents, but we understand why now, you know?
Right.
It's like, we're not going to spend 30 times as much for something that does the same job, and you're going to ruin in the next 4 months anyway.
Exactly. Like,
I did buy the Britney Spears one, even though I wasn't in school.
Like, I have three kids, and we just went school supply shopping, like I said, mm-hmm. this past weekend. We spent $150 on school supplies.
It gets crazy.
For the three kids.
Yeah.
Now, granted, my 7-year-old had the biggest list, and then my 9-year-old got shorter.
He needs crayons.
He needs colored pencils. He needs like boxes of tissue and glue sticks and folders and this, that, and the other. But in all honesty, my 7-year or my 9-year-old is the one who's the most expensive right now because I have to rent her a musical instrument because
oh, yeah.
she needs it for band because she's starting band as she's starting fourth grade. So
I resemble that remark.
Exactly, because of all instruments, she picked the oboe, and I think you're in the same boat.
In exactly the same boat.
And guess what? Those two are in the same class. So they got the same teacher like for the whole school year. So, I mean, I think that spells trouble. and I don't mean in a bad way. They're just, you know.
Can't spell trouble without O-B-O-E. Whatever. It works. It works. It worked in my head. Never mind. Anyway.
And so the oboe rental is like $140 for like 10 months.
That's not terrible.
It's not terrible.
That's pretty good.
But when you add it to the school supplies that you've already bought.
Yeah.
Now you're pushing almost $200 for one kid.
Hey, buy one.
Do you know how expensive those are?
Oh, yes, I do.
I was a band geek, and this stuff has only gotten more expensive.
We just bought a trombone for the eldest of the twins, and it ended up being a Bach professional. I don't remember what it was. $1,700? $1,700 for it.
And you're going to kill her the first time she gets a dent or a scratch in the bell of that instrument.
Hey, yes, but we got her the used one, and you know what? You barely can tell that's even used. I mean, and she played a brand new one and the used one, and then she played an intermediate one. And the used one, even though it was exactly the same as the brand new one, I think had a richer sound.
Well, the other ones were probably made by Yamaha.
They're all Bachs.
Oh, they were all Bachs.
Yeah. The intermediate was a Yamaha. The brand new Bach and the used Bach were exactly the same instrument.
Okay, well,
used.
The used Bach is going to sound different because it's...
It sounded richer.
It's because it's been used, you know, with the new one, it sounds nasty, but you got to get the spit build up in there. You got to get it tuned right. You got to get, you know, the oil and all that stuff in there. The Yamahas, they're inexpensive and they're great introductory instruments because I started out with a Yamaha cornet and then I went over and ultimately wound up playing the euphonium, which is like a baby tuba.
That's what we wanted Joe to play, but she didn't want to have anything to do with it.
Beautiful, beautiful sound.
I have a feeling that our kids had an influence on each other for their instruments.
Possibly. I blame them.
Yeah.
I'm stealing her allowance for the next year. But so, I remember going to school. Like, I had my astronomy trapper keeper, which I absolutely loved because I was an astronomy nerd. I actually took it in fifth grade because it was an elective I
that
could take.
That was pretty cool.
I took it in college. It was awesome.
He was my teacher was named Mr. Qualls.
No. In college, it was just a way to get a date. Would you come like to see the stars with me?
Unfortunately, that never happened. But,
oh, okay.
Because, you know, I have so much game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, in fifth grade, you know, your astronomy teacher has a 12-inch telescope. You know, you're out on the football field at night with your parents and your teacher, and you're looking at the stars and stuff. That was fantastic.
Did you know that Lockport High School has a observatory?
How do I get in? That's all I want to know.
It's if you drive into the parking lot on the west end of the building. There's these two tiny little buildings in the middle of the parking lot, which make no sense. That's the telescope and the viewing room.
That's actually pretty cool.
Yep.
Sweet.
In fact, I'm going to throw some personal history out there. In 1986, I was woken up at like 2 o'clock in the morning by my scoutmaster. My parents woke me up and he was waiting out front. We went out to the telescope, the observatory, the Remick Observatory, to see Halley's Comet.
Nice.
Yep. We didn't see it because of the way the clouds were, but we did get to see Saturn and some other planets, and it was so much fun. And I wish they need somebody to take it over so that it's more usable. So I think there's an astronomy club in Lockport of adults, but I haven't heard too much from them lately. But I know they were trying to raise money to fix the telescope, and there's been some work done over there. So I don't know if maybe you'd be interested in helping out with that.
I don't know. I'd have to look into it and see, you know, how much free time I'd be able to, you know, to devote to that.
Right.
But
I think they need some, you know, like carpentry skills and stuff like that.
Mm.
So we had to have your wife put shelves up.
Yeah.
Because she does that.
Yes.
While you're using the bathroom.
Yes. 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 I was on the toilet when that happened. But no, I mean, like my daughter, she's going in eighth grade, my oldest, you know, mm-hmm. and her list was relatively short, but she still needed like a crap ton of folders and all this other crap. I remember being in junior high and you needed like map colors for geography, pens, pencils, college ruled notebook paper.
Because wide ruled is for sissies.
That's right. And you needed a notebook.
Yeah.
And maybe a few folders. That was it.
And paper bags to cover your books.
Yes.
No, what you did is you went to the grocery store, and you, when your parents bought groceries that week, you and they asked you paper or plastic, you paper. Said paper.
Paper.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And you used those because you could get two book covers out of one of those bags.
That's right.
And so for your 7 or 8 classes that you had, 4 bags of groceries, there were your book covers. And then you're like, hey, Ma, when you go to the grocery store while I'm at school, I need you to get 2 more paper bags because my stuff is tearing. Okay. Because why am I going to pay $1 to get a book cover from the school that is this flimsy?
Right. Very flimsy.
Is it wrong to say that I miss that? I wish I had the chance to, you know, cover my kids' books. They don't do that anymore. At least not where my kids go to school.
Now I got to take black marks
not,
a lot and
they're not up to the high school,
you know,
yet.
Mark through some of the bad words and phrases that are in there. And
so many. My son came home in 7th grade, so he's entering 8th grade as well as, you know, your daughter. And he came home at one point last year. I'm like, what is this? He goes, this is my Chromebook. I go, what? So he was issued.
They were allowed to bring it home?
He would bring it home.
Wow.
He didn't keep it at home over the summer, but he was allowed to bring it home, and then he has to go and turn it back. But and so
they had
many
to turn it in by the at the end of the day.
He brought it home, and whether he was allowed, I don't know. Maybe he wasn't allowed. I don't know. But so many different things are being put online now, and so many schools are going. I'm not saying all of them, but so many are going towards a more technologically based curriculum where everything is going to be online. Like, here's the lesson. Do the homework online. Like, we still got to buy the paper. We still got to buy the folders. They still got to take notes. But they're doing the homework on a computer. So, I mean, it's especially prevalent in the classes my son's taking at the community college, where everything is online. Everything's through that Blackboard site, or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, I mean, I understand to a degree why they're using tablets and computers in school, because everything now is digitized.
It's the world we live in.
It is. Everything is online. It's on a computer, you know, or it's in a database somewhere, you know. And so you need computer skills to access that. Now, I took my first computer class when I was in 7th grade in junior high, and we had Windows 3.1. Okay, so that's how far back I go with
still
using
one of the best Windows versions ever.
Yeah, and then we upgraded to Windows 3.11.
Mm-hmm.
Woo! You know, we're all high cotton at that point, but you know, it was a computer lit class, and it was for the entire year, and that's how I learned how to use a computer.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I've just expanded on that because I'm still somewhat of a computer nerd. But my oldest was using tablets in like 2nd grade. No, sorry, it was my middle child. No, 1st grade. Yeah, 1st grade. Because
the point we're getting at
Fort
is
Hood.
So much younger than what we were when we were. Yeah, exactly. My youngest is 5. She's behind me right now playing on my tablet. So, yeah.
But see, it's a part of their daily lives now. And it wasn't for us. Like, cell phones weren't part of our lives, and neither were computers, because computers were still too expensive, and some of them were still too big to even fit in the home. And the first cell phone was like $600 to $1,000 or something like that. Mm-hmm. And now it's what happens? You're walking down the street. Everybody's walking on a cell phone. Families go out to dinner. Everybody's looking at their cell phones. I mean, they're just so ingrained into our lives. I mean, I understand why they're doing that. At some point, you think it would be necessary to take that out, like at least maybe one class. Don't digitize this one class.
I agree.
Keep it old school book, because how are they going to learn how to go to a library and conduct research?
Right.
Because there's some things that, you know, you would just rather, you know what? Go into the library, experience the quietness, the smell of the pages of the books, and what it's like to use the Dewey Decimal System.
Mm-hmm.
Go find your books, find the information in that book, reference it, paraphrase it. Because now everybody just, what do? I'm going to copy this. I'm going to put that in there as a direct quote, and then I'm going to...
Do you know how bad I am about the Dewey Decimal System? One of my kids was looking for a book at the library. It was local history. I go, that's 917.
She probably looked at you and says, no, it's not. It's 415.
I was right. It was 917.35, I think, is what the book was.
That's impressive.
Now, I remember when we, in fourth grade, maybe it was the first year, we had an Apple IIe.
I had, that was our first computer, too.
On a cart that went from classroom to classroom. We had it for like a week at a time.
So I'm saying that's my first family's computer.
Really?
My family's first computer was an Apple IIe, an old one.
Ours was a Gateway.
I always wanted one of those.
We had a Gateway, and it was 75 megahertz was the processing speed of that thing.
I remember when we first got, when we upgraded from the Apple IIe, which was the green screen, the dot matrix printer, all that good stuff. When we upgraded to a Microsoft computer, I want to say it was a Dell. I don't remember exactly what kind. And a laser printer or an inkjet printer, whatever. My dad was thoroughly excited. He goes, yeah, we got this new computer. It's got this. It's got half a gig hard drive. And I'm just like, okay. Of course, at the time, it's so much memory. Now, if you don't have at least like, you know, eight, you know, whatever plus of, you know, RAM or whatever, then, you know, you're out of luck. So,
well, I mean, it depends on what you're doing. I mean, RAM is great for loading a program in its entirety, too, so you can access the program faster. I mean, the processing speed of your computer, you know, makes a difference, but so does, you know, the amount of RAM you have. You know, so if you're a big video gamer, you want a lot of RAM.
Yes.
You also want your computer's processing speed to be up there. So, you know, my personal one, I have a 4 gigahertz processor and like 32 gigs of RAM. Because not only do I do my college, you know, the work for my schoolwork on it from university, but I also play video games when I get some free time. Not as much as I used to, but, you know, when I do play, like, I build a computer, I don't have to upgrade it or anything for like 7-8 years. So, like, I just build one and it's
mine
built
never lasts that long. I beat the snot out of my laptops. I get every ounce and more out of it.
We have a basic desktop at home that is brand new, and it replaced the one that we were gifted almost 10 years ago. So the desktop lasted about 10 years for the very basic stuff. We're talking writing, occasional like Roller Coaster Tycoon or Sims, nothing major like Halo or anything like that.
We're
doing role play type stuff or online gaming and web surfing, you know, just the essentials, if you will, like the day-to-day stuff.
Like Microsoft Suite or Microsoft Office is on it, and, you know, you might be able to play solitaire or something, like you said, The Sims, and cruise the internet
at a high speed.
The speed of smell.
Yeah. You were talking about the smell of books, and unless we want to keep adding to this whole...
I was going
to
say that, you know...
That was a perfect segue. So unless we want to keep talking about school supplies, I think we should transition to what we also wanted to talk about.
Anyway, the smell of books.
It is one of the most fantastic things ever, for the most part. I love going to a used bookstore and smelling the books that are there, for the most part. Every once in a while, you'll get a book at the library on the new release shelves, which is typically where I go first, where the person who had it before me was a chain smoker. Mm-hmm. And the book reeks. And, you know, they typically try to Febreze it or something when it comes in when it smells that bad. But every once in a while, you're like, oh. And the people who eat over their books so they have taco parts when you open the pages, I don't care. You're not saving it for me.
Right.
But I love, love, love the smell of books. And I love walking up and down the stacks looking for the next great book that I want to read. My boss just put this on Facebook literally just now. Things book lovers do, and I know I do some of this. Read several books at the same time.
Okay.
Yes. while also having a stack of books to read next.
Yeah. Yes. Okay.
And keep a running list of the other books you still want to read.
As long as the list is considered, if it's considered a list in my head, but not written down.
Oh, I have a written down list.
Okay.
Oh, I have one in my head.
I also keep a log of the books I have read.
Unless Goodreads counts, then...
I'll show you my log someday.
Well, okay.
You feel happy when you remember you get to read your book later. Like, there are days I'm like, okay, I get to read... Like, when Wendy was gone, I'm like, okay, if the kids go to bed at 9:30, I'll have an hour and a half to read. So, there's that. And I'm like, happy, happy. Feel sad and lost when you finish a great book.
Yes.
I always want to know what's happening in their lives beyond that sometimes.
I agree.
You pause to appreciate a beautifully written sentence.
I did that. I've done that a couple times, but only one time. No, I'm sorry, twice. Twice. I was reading one book. I'm still waiting for its sequel. It's supposed to come out at some point soon. It hasn't. It's been delayed for God knows how long. But the first book that, I ever read where I just closed the book, I'm like, oh my God, that paragraph was like one of the most beautifully written things I've ever read in my life, was The Golem and the Ginny. So I'll recommend that one. And then... all three of us have at least watched Ready Player One, and I know, Craig, you and I have read it. And the first time when Wade signs into his Oasis account by logging in with his password, and his password is, "Greetings, Starfighter, you've been recruited by the Star League to fight, you know, the Emperor Zur in a Codan Armada." I just put the book down and gave it a little round of applause. I'm like, this book is right up my alley. I cannot wait to read the rest of this. So, yes, keep going.
See the cover of an old book you've read and be transported back to your youth.
That happened in the TV show The Goldbergs.
It actually happens here because every once in a while the kids will pick up a book and I'm like, oh, that was a great book.
Yes.
And
yes.
So that happens.
And you choose your own adventure. I mean, we all grew up reading those. I'm sure Bobby and I did. Craig, you might have been right before them.
Walk into a library or bookstore and say, I could live here.
I do that every time I go into like Barnes & Noble.
Mm-hmm.
And not just because they have coffee and scones.
That's true.
But that's a bonus.
Hey, the bookshop in Medina even has coffee. And they've got games. So, yeah.
I get bored. love to read. And I've kind of fallen off the reading wagon here in the last couple months.
Not nearly as bad as I fell off. I fell off and got ran over a ways back. But
I think I'm at 68 books so far for the year, which is way low for me. I may not hit 100 this year for the first time in 20 years.
Last year, I read 33, which is about 10 times as many as I'd read any previous year over the last, any other previous like 10 years. This year, I'm up to about 12.
I've read about 60 psychological studies. Does that count? Like,
that's some intensive reading, so we'll give you that one.
Like, yeah, I just don't think that books on tape are, we've had this discussion.
Like, I'm only counting one.
I don't get to read as much as I want. Like, I haven't read a book at all this year for pleasure because I'm finishing my bachelor's. And so this year I started off in some junior classes and I just finished, you know, my capstone for psychology. And so I spend so much time reading these studies and like trying to get my research proposal together. So I was reading study after study after study. And then when I finally do get a free time, you know, some free time, I'm like, I don't want to read anything right now. Like, my eyes hurt.
Don't blame you.
And so, but I'm really looking forward to the third book in the Godslayer Chronicles coming out by James Clemens. The first two books, first one's called The Godslayer, second one's called Hinterland. Fantastic.
I like his other books under another name.
Yeah. Yeah, he does. He has like two pseudonames or pseudonyms.
James Rollins is the main one that I know of.
Yep.
There's a book that Niagara's Water Cooler published my review of it recently called Recursion.
I have it on the shelf. Haven't read it yet.
It is incredible. And Bobby, I don't know if you saw what I wrote, but it's like Inception was a mad scientist and decided to merge Frequency and Back to the Future. And I mean, it's a mind trip of a book that basically says, what would you do if you could go back and do it all over again, but you still had all of your original memories?
Have you ever read the first 15 lives of August West?
No.
Or Harry West? That's kind of the same thing. He would die, but then he'd come back and relive his life again with all his old memories.
Not quite the same thing. But I will say this. I mean, the author who wrote Recursion, Blake Crouch, he also wrote a book that was amazing last year that kept my interest and I couldn't put it down, called Dark Matter, where basically there are, you know, an infinite version of you living on infinite Earths, and each Earth is different. It's not entirely unlike the multiverse.
Flash.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, what if one of them found a way to cross dimensions and wind up on your Earth and decided to take your place? So that one, I believe I called it Robert Frost's The Road Not Taken on steroids.
That really sounds like an old Jet Li, Jason Statham movie called The One, where there's all these different universes, and to become the most powerful version of yourself, mm-hmm. you have to go to all these different other universes and kill the version of yourself,
and then you get that one's power,
and then you get stronger. Mm-hmm. And so eventually Jet Li gets to the point where he kills like all of them, but like I think one, he may have killed all of them, but somehow Jason Statham still wins, and he gets sent to this prison where there's literally no way out of it. They just time warp you into this prison, and you're just there, and it's a bunch of criminals. But it was a really fun movie.
Let's do the time warp again.
Yeah. No,
it's in my head.
Yeah. But we're talking about, you know, books that have kept our attention recently, movies. But I think when it comes down to books, it also helps to not just continually read one genre of book. Because if you expand your horizons a little bit, you can be amazed at what else you can find.
My daughter has that issue. Like, she will only read... Like, she liked Harry Potter. So she will read the Harry Potter books straight through. And she's read them like 3 times now, but that's the only thing she'll read. I'm like, well, how about if there's something like Harry Potter? She goes, maybe. So I got her Artemis Fowl. Stop barking.
Big dumb dog.
No, wait a minute. Let's come on. We're talking books. We're talking famous things. Stella.
Yeah.
You know, come on. Okay, there we go.
So she hated Artemis Fowl. So then she found a dragon one that she kind of liked, and she goes, "I read all the books, but the author needs to write more. He's not going to write anymore. He's doing something else." Well, then he's an idiot. Mm-hmm. But she'll keep reading it, like, and she'll only read the one book. If let's say we're going someplace and she leaves her book at home, but there's another book in the vehicle, she won't read it because I'm in the midst of another book because she's so focused on that one. I don't get it because I'll have 3 or 4 books going at the same time, depending on what my interests are that day.
I'll pick up a book just based... You may not be able to judge a book by its cover.
But I totally do.
But a book can get your attention by its cover. That is 100% true.
Yes.
I was at the library a week or two ago, and there was on the new release shelf, there was a book that had a Jewish Star of David right in the center of it, but it had an Asian-looking woman also there. It was like called The Song of the Jade Lily. I'm like, what is this? So I picked it up, and it was the, you know how there's normally like a tagline from some other author who might promote the book? This author was the one who wrote The Tattooist of Auschwitz, which is a book I finished earlier this year. I'm like,
on my recommendation.
On your recommendation, which you still haven't read yet.
I know.
So I opened up the book, and I'm like, what is this about? And it was all about how European Jews wound up becoming refugees in Shanghai in, you know, at the dawn of World War II. And I'm like, this is interesting. I honestly never knew about this. And it was a historical fiction timeline that kind of coincided with a more present day timeline. It was going back and forth between 1939 through 1945 and 2016. And it was showing how a descendant of one family member, what might happen, you know, how were they related, were they adopted, were they related. It was a very, very unique story. And it was one of those things where the cover got my attention, the subject matter kept my attention. Sometimes titles grab you too. One I wrote about last year, Summer Hours at the Robbers Library. So I'm like, what the
heck? That was a fantastic book.
It was great. I'm like, what is this? A robber library. I opened it up like, this is interesting, you know. And there are some, you know, there's some books you also pick up based on the fact that the author wrote something that was really, really good, and then you pick up the second effort or the follow-up effort to that book because you expect it to continue with the story, and you read it and you're like, yeah, this really ain't doing it for me. So, or then you pick something up because, all right, this is something I've never read before, like a true crime book or a crime thriller type thing.
See, this is where I get to go full-fledged nerd, is when the books that I read. Because, one, I love epic fantasy. So anything like Dungeons & Dragons, like, doesn't have to be a Dungeons & Dragons book.
But you still haven't read the Game of Thrones.
I haven't got to that yet. I'm going to get to that.
You're
going to
be 40 in like 4 days, so your time is running out.
I will get. I'm waiting until.
So is the author.
Yeah.
Well, I'm waiting until the last book comes out so I can buy the box set.
Okay.
Because I don't want to start buying them individually. I want the box set.
You want them all to look nice on the shelf.
I do.
I don't blame you.
But so Epic Fantasy, anything that resembles like Dungeons and Dragons, so wizards and warriors and all that kind of stuff, I love that kind of stuff. But then I also like my science fiction. I read just about every Star Trek The Next Generation book there was when I was a kid.
And then, science fiction is one of my biggest beefs lately when you go to the library or to the bookstore. I love old school hard science fiction, mm-hmm. like Asimov and Arthur Clarke and Greg Bear and all that. They're so hard to find now. Everything is tending towards the fantasy side because of the popularity of Game of Thrones, I think.
Yeah.
And there's a difference between fantasy and sci-fi. Right.
Yeah.
Sorry to interrupt for one more second, Bobby. The one thing about recursion somebody said on the tagline for it was like, this generation's Philip K. Dick. I'm thinking to myself, well, wait a minute. I've read Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep? And I've read The Man in the High Castle. And both of those were, I understand why they are popular, but they were tedious to get through. These two I read from Blake Crouch were amazingly fast-paced and everything else. They're still great sci-fi. So I would say that he's nowhere along the lines of dry sci-fi. He's exciting sci-fi.
We'll see with the science fiction. It's supposed to be grounded in science, mm-hmm. but obviously not true. With fantasy, it can just be whatever you make up on a whim.
Yeah.
You know, and that being the big difference. But my other genre that I really love that has a dozen subgenres is true crime. So you start talking about murderers and rapists and kidnappers and, you know, torturers and stuff. Like, I don't know why, but reading about it's fascinating to me. It you get to like get into the human psyche and you're like, I'm reading these analyses by psychologists and not just like somebody at the master's level, like somebody who's got a PhD in psychology, a criminal forensic psychologist has been doing it for like 20 or 30 years. This is what they do, you know? And so you get into their psyche, like, why did this person kidnap and torture this person? Or why did this person become a serial killer? Like, I love that kind of stuff. So those are like my three favorite genres. Now, the other books that I like to read are cookbooks. And I know that sounds kind of goofy.
Oh, that's fine.
I love to cook. And so why not get a book that has recipes and stuff that's in it? I have a book written by Ball, who makes the little glass jars.
Yeah.
That I drink out of at home. And I get pickling and canning recipes out of there, and I pickle and can. I just made 8 pints of black plum jam a few days ago. It's fantastic. It turned out wonderful. Now, I just do that on my own because I like to do it. But, you know, some of the books that I read as a kid that, you know, my kids are going to read, at least I hope, is going to be books like Wuthering Heights, The Canterbury Tales.
You're going to torture them with Wuthering Heights?
I don't want to, but if I had to suffer through it, they do too. And then, you know, they should read the Canterbury Tales.
I had to read Canterbury Tales in Latin.
So did I.
And in Middle English.
Yes. I had to actually recite the prologue in Middle English as well. You know, but then you get into stuff like, you know, Old Man and the Sea, Of Mice and Men. I mean, we're talking like classics, like classic literature here. I hope my kids have to read some of that.
I don't care if it's the abridged version. I just want them to be exposed to stuff like Charles Dickens, Mark Twain, and
I agree and mostly with that. The problem I have with the books that they're reading in high school, and you have not gotten there yet, mm-mm. and neither of you, the books that the high schoolers are reading when they're already moody teenagers are moody. Like, you're feeding the dragon.
I think you and I have had this discussion elsewhere, whether it was on a Google chat, a Facebook chat, or something, and I'll bring that idea up now, and that is, if you're going to teach a classic, I'm not sure exactly which one I would use as an example right this second, but if you're going to teach a classic, pick a contemporary one as well that kids might actually be interested in, because it's going to be written...
Juxtapose the two of them.
Yes. For as much guff, and that's the word I'm going to use because there's so many other bad words I could choose to use, but I'm using... We'll use flack. How about that? As much flack as the novel Ready Player One got for its writing style and the way it was written and everything else, and was it good, was it bad, whatever. Nobody can deny the fact that it was a book for people to read, especially for that group of people who don't like to read, because it got them reading again. So whether it was good, bad, or indifferent, it had a very positive effect.
That was the whole Harry Potter phenomena, too.
Exactly.
People were reading again because of that series.
So people are reading Harry Potter. It's like, okay, you're reading Harry Potter. We're going to make Harry Potter part of our curriculum, but I also want you to read The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. That's still around the same level. A book Craig and I read last year called Eagle and Crane. Okay.
Fantastic historical fiction.
Absolutely. That's a book that you could add to a curriculum, and you could simultaneously teach a history lesson and an English lesson, because it deals with the internment camps in World War II. So if you've got a World War II unit going on, your history teacher and your English teacher can be like, hey, let's team up for this unit for the next 2 or 3 weeks. And, here's a book for the kids to read that is about that. It's not true, but it's based in fact. So they can go from there and they can explore elsewhere. What are some of the other books that we had to read? I think some of them
Fall of the House of Usher, The Telltale Heart. Those are Edgar Allan Poe.
The Adventures of Huckleberry Finn is a book I know I had to go through.
Yeah, we had to read.
Oh, but that's a fantastic book.
Absolutely.
It's an adventure story.
We had to do Tom Sawyer,
mm-hmm.
Huck Finn.
I think at one point we did David Copperfield and another Dickens tale. It might have been Great Expectations.
Tale of Two Cities.
I was going to say A Tale of Two Cities.
Yeah, but I mean, just about anything by Dickens.
It was
the
best of times. It was the worst of books. I love reading, but that one will put me to sleep.
Fair enough.
One thing I get from English teachers is, well, you got to teach the kids about the human condition. Oh, great. But does every book have to be about death and suicide? Because that's what a lot of the books in high school are.
I didn't read The Catcher in the Rye until I was in college. And I was thinking to myself, all right, cool, I have to read this now. And I got through it. And I say that as a matter of fact, I got through it. There are some books that are classics, and for the life of me, I cannot figure out why. I read it.
Because someone said it should be.
Exactly. And it's like, why do we... And then, you got unknowing parents, many... I'm not counting us, but we all know those parents, right? Who will show up at a board meeting and complain, like, why are my kids being exposed to this book? They need to be taught the classics. It's like, have you read the classic? Do you know what's in this book? Do you know what he's doing? Do you know what she's doing? Do you know what they're doing together? And it's like Shakespeare. It's like...
It astounds me how many people push for Whom the Bell Tolls. I mean, it's a great book, but I don't want...
It's a great song.
It's a great book, but I'm not sure I want my young teenage daughters reading it.
Exactly. Some of the best teachers out there, and if you're listening, you know who you are. Some of the best teachers out there are able to find something in a classic book and somehow relate it to a more contemporary book or series of books, not unlike, we'll say, the Hunger Games trilogy or Suzanne Collins' other five-book set, The Underland Chronicles, which for my money is better than the Hunger Games trilogy. I mean, there are some great series out there that teachers can be like, all right, I want you to take this book and look at this, or I want you to take this book and look at this, and I want you to find out how times have changed to the point where this person can write about this and this person can write about this and why things might be different. My 10-year-old, she likes to read. She's into graphic novels, but hey, she's still reading. She was reading the original Mary Poppins book. She's like, Mary Poppins is kind of mean.
Yep.
I'm like, well, what about the next two or three books? She goes, I don't know. And then at one point she read The Secret Garden or some other trending towards classic literature for, a girl her age. My son's read a whole bunch of the great illustrated classics and some of the more abridged versions of some other books, like, I'll say, Frankenstein, Jekyll and Hyde.
Do they read The Time Machine by H.G. Wells anymore? I mean, even if you take the story beyond just the Eloy and Morlocks and you realize that it's about class warfare, I mean, there's contemporary issues that can, you could, it's more than just reading the book, and that book has, it's 120 years old, but still.
Yeah, The War of the Worlds is all about, well, there's a whole lot of different books that are science fiction that are still applicable today in concept, not necessarily in the execution of the story, but the concept itself is still very alive and well. H.G. Wells, Jules Verne, a lot of those.
Yeah, and I agree with that. You can take the story and the moral of that story and still apply it, to today and learn some life lessons from those books. And, going back to something you had said earlier about you know, the parent or parents showing up at the board meeting and why are my kids not reading the classics? You know, why are they reading this instead? You know, and then they start bringing up, well, this book is not very inclusive because it only has one type of this character or one type of this character and blah, 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 blah. Like, I mean, society's completely different. And I'm not trying to put a political spin on it, but society's...
No, you're not wrong, though.
But society's completely different today than it was when we were growing up. Mm-hmm. Like, and it's in the movie Field of Dreams, mm-hmm. where the one lady's at the board meeting and she's talking about James Earl Jones, his character, and like, you know, what he was, you know, doing. And she was like, did you know he does this? You know, and everybody's like, oh, and they all gasp. And that was just like super bad back then. But now if somebody was to go to a board meeting and say that, they'd be like, yes, yeah, so what? You know, he didn't include the other 5,000 genders that are out there, you know, so we can't read this book. I'm just saying, like, it's a thing.
It is.
I think the one thing to remember, too, when people say, oh, these aren't the classics. At one point, those classics were contemporary literature.
At one point, a lot of those classics that you're asking to be put on the curriculum, many of them at one point were banned.
Well, yeah. Banned Book Week is coming up, actually, and I always make my kids read one book off that list.
Hmm. Wasn't The Wizard of Oz banned at one point?
Probably. You'd be amazed at what's been banned.
What, does the school district put out a list of...
No, there's actually a website. It's a national thing, Banned Book Week, and you can go to their website, and there's a list of the top 100 books that have been banned.
I know Finn has been banned multiple
everywhere,
times.
Yep.
Yeah, and it's still one of the greatest classics of American
literature. Went up to the Buffalo Library.
Why was it banned? Because they said it was racist or something?
Yeah, I think so. I went up to the Buffalo Library, and they have the original manuscript up there, because Mark Twain lived in Buffalo for a time. He was the editor of the Buffalo Courier.
Do people not understand that when a book was written, it was written in the times...
In the context of the times.
Exactly. You know, just because, you know, some things may have been acceptable then and they're not acceptable now, thank goodness, doesn't mean that you should ban that book.
When
you take everything that you've done that's bad and you get rid of any memory of that, now you're dooming yourself to repeat history because you have nothing to remind you that at one point in time, things were not good and things were bad. And books are a way of doing that. They're eventually going to be the last resort, because when you start taking down monuments and statues and plaques and all this other stuff that reminds you of things that were bad, now you're going to go to these books and you're going to find these things that were bad in our history as a country, in our culture, in America, and eventually they're going to start banning those too. And I'm like, you can't do that with a book. Eventually, the book is going to be the last resort. It's going to be the last, you know, refuge of this is what we did. This was bad. This is the way that it was. Because
you can't learn otherwise.
But that book is going to give the people who read it at least somewhat of an understanding. It's going to get you into that person's perspective. And so you can at least get an inkling of what it was like to live in those times when those bad things were happening.
Absolutely. It was like, think about it for a moment. The year is 2019. We are 80 years into the end. Well, it's the 80th anniversary, if you will, 80 year anniversary of Gone with the Wind, based on a classic book. The movie and the book are now considered heavily racist. Am I wrong?
They shouldn't be, but they are.
Okay, so I'm not entirely wrong, but I'm not entirely right. But people look at it now like, oh, you can't watch this, you can't do that, you can't do that. It's like, oh, I'm going to parrot everything you just said. If something is written in 1939, it's going to have a much different feel than something written in 2019.
Absolutely.
If something is written and produced and turned into a film in 1972, it's going to have a much different feel than something written in 2019.
The way people wrote in 1930 and the way people write in today is entirely different. When you're reading a book from 1930, 1929, something like that,
1890.
I mean, you're living... Mm-hmm. As you're reading that book, at least the way I read books, and it comes out like a video, so I've actually become part of the story. It's like you're living the lives of those people that are being described in the book. And then you can learn, like, good books provoke an emotional response, like
yes,
good music.
You would hope so.
So that emotional response is something that the author was going for. Any emotional response, they want you to respond. Even if you don't like it, they want you to respond. So if you're disgusted by something, remember that this is why it happened and what not to do now.
Right. Well, you want to talk emotional responses, right?
The dog keeps whining, yeah, and I stop petting her?
Yeah. The book I just finished, The Song of the Jade Lily, right? I was thoroughly impressed with this book. I went on Goodreads. I gave it 5 stars. It was a bit of history I didn't know about. Yes, I know that this particular story probably didn't happen, but I'm sure something piqued this author's interest enough to do some research and get some things to the point where it's based enough in fact to make me think this was a very cool bit of history. And at some point down the road, if I have time, I might research it some more myself. So I wanted to see what other people had written about it as comments. And one person's like, well, it was too heavy on this. It was too heavy on this. One person said, there was one part in the book where they, you know, it was almost pornographic, the amount of violence she described. I'm thinking to myself, one, the part they're describing takes place at the, you know, during the middle of World War II in, you know, Shanghai, Hong Kong, that area, when there's Japanese soldiers occupying different parts of the street. And soldiers, historically speaking, have been portrayed as not being the most gentle at that point in time. So what I'm treading carefully here because I wasn't there and I don't know enough about it to say one thing or the other. But this is someone complaining about something that was written where it wasn't written for effect. It was written for this is something that could very well have happened. So it's like, okay. It's like whenever you read any type of fiction concerning anything regarding the Holocaust, when you read about how, you know, you see the people being rounded up, put on trains and so on. So like, oh, well, this is just they're too violent. It's like ask any survivor or read any survivor's story and they'll tell you that's how it was. So, I mean, if you're not going to like what they have to say, then, you know, read something else. So the emotional response is, yes, an author will go for that. And sometimes they have to write a little bit too much to describe the scene in order to get the response they want.
Regardless of the genre that you're reading, you should always learn something when you're reading and have fun doing it.
Yeah.
So read. Go to your local library. Read. Buy your favorite author's books. I just bought 2 David Bell books because I like his writing and I've done reviews of his other books and he follows me on Twitter. And so I said, you know what? I'm going to buy his next books. I have them. I'm ready to read them.
I started a book today that, you know, sometimes I pick up a book based on the tagline and who's written the tagline. I have a book at home that I haven't read yet, but Ernest Cline suggested that one, and he wrote Ready Player One. I have a book that I'm 50 pages into now that was recommended by Frederick Bachman, who wrote A Man Called Ove, Beartown.
I have
Beartown.
A new book by him in my bookshelf right now.
He has a new one out?
Mm-hmm.
Really?
I'll grab it after soon as we're done here.
Oh, very cool. And then, Craig, you and I are going to be soon reading an advanced copy of Mike Chen's new book.
Have you started that yet?
Not yet, but I'm going to finish the one I've got out from the library now, and then I'm going to dive into the NetGalley one called A Beginning at the End about post-apocalyptic San Francisco, which just sounds very unique.
Cool.
So,
well, that means an apocalypse happened there, so that's got my interest piqued.
All right.
Well, his first book was outstanding, Here and Now and Then. So, all right, we're going to keep going? Or you want to stop? Because you're having an issue.
Yeah, I am. That, and I'm checking out your time, too, because it's 12 minutes to 5.
I see what time it is, yeah. I know. So
get out there and read, but if you're not reading, make sure you're listening to The Dads Must Be Crazy. Or go over, if you're a little adventurous, go over to our Shenanigans podcast. But remember, that's not safe for children or work. So make sure you listen to that one with headphones on so your workers want to know why you're laughing.
Yes.
But The Dads Must Be Crazy, this awesome one, you can listen with anybody around and enjoy it. So until next time, thanks for listening. This has been Howie, Craig, and Bobby, not generally in that order.
Check out Classical Ballet of Western New York while you're at it. And if you know anybody who wants to give us a sponsorship, niagaraswatercooler@gmail.com.
Yep, niagaraswatercooler@gmail.com. We're always looking. Thanks. When you have kids, you often find yourself involved with lots of extracurricular activities. In my house, we go to dance. All 4 of my daughters have gone to Classical Ballet of Western New York. With 2 locations, Main Street in Clarence and Main Street in beautiful downtown Lockport, Classical Ballet of Western New York is a fun way for your children to learn the fine art of dance. This school provides an extensive ballet education for its students. Classical Ballet of Western New York is a cultural institution aiming to enhance the lives of the youths of the community. They strive to develop its students physically, intellectually, culturally, emotionally, and socially through the discipline of dance. Classes start in September with performances of the Nutcracker in December and a single recital for each studio in June. There are also summer workshops available. Call 631 1582 for more information, or visit them on the web at www.classicalballetofwny.com. Simply click the link at the bottom of our page and you'll be there without all that typing. Our family literally visits these studios 6 days a week, and we've made many new friends while sitting in the waiting room while our kids dance. So if there's a kid in your family who loves dance, from your 3 or 4 year old all the way through high school, boys or girls, check out Classical Ballet of Western New York at 58 Main Street in Lockport or 8180 Main Street in Clarence, and tell them the dad sent you. The Dads Must Be Crazy would like to thank Scott Leffler for putting together our awesome intro to the show. And thank you to Amanda Hodge, who helps us with our designs and logos. Intro and outro music provided by Incomtech.com. Our theme music is Retro Future Clean by Kevin McLeod, licensed under Creative Commons by Attribution 3.0 license.